This podcast is supported by Washington.org. Washington, D.C. offers visitors so much to explore. Just ask Dayo, who shared her experiences from a recent visit.
What was your favorite food all weekend?
The Ethiopian food at Sihei.
And the first place you would visit again?
The bookstore, Little District Books.
What did you appreciate the most?
Really just like the genuine kindness of everyone that I encountered this weekend.
Why should people visit D.C.?
Well, D.C. is a place with such a thriving culture.
Washington, D.C. has something for everybody. Plan your next trip at Washington.org.
I'll just give you the motion, okay?
Welcome to the New York Times Popcast, your sweet destiny of music news and criticism. I'm your host, John Caramonica.
All right. We didn't have a check for this song, so we'll just say it went to number one, and that's what it is. Okay.
You are listening to one of the last great challenges of 2016 and the first great music critical opportunity of 2017. That is audio from Mariah Carey on New Year's Eve singing or something like it or something not like it, the song Emotions, which she will have you know went to number one. But that's about all you could have learned from that performance. I feel like we have a sort of conclave of lapsed Catholics when it comes to Mariah Carey. I am joined by Rich Jesuiak, senior writer at Jezebel.com.
Yes. Hi. Thank you.
Yes. You are very welcome. And I am joined by Michael Arsenault, who is a writer for The Root and The Guardian and many other places and has an incredibly motivational Snapchat and Instagram presence.
Sorry, Lamely. Thank you.
Yeah, I feel like we're going to be saying that a lot today.
Yes.
Yeah, should we just like blanket up front, just be like, don't at us to any Lamely members?
Lamely is totally on board with this entire, everybody knows that this is
what
disaster.
Yes. We're all trying to get through it together.
That's how it feels, right? Okay, and this is something I want to start by talking about New Year's Eve and what happened sort of in a smaller, micro detailed way. But then I eventually later in the podcast, we'll talk bigger picture about how maybe the New Year's Eve thing is maybe just the next logical step in what Mariah has been doing publicly for the last few years. But again, to the Lamely, you know, please don't at us, or at least don't at me. You can at Rich and you can at Michael.
You can at me. I mean, yeah, the Lamely, as far as fandoms go, the Lamely is like cake. Compared
That's
to
true.
Lady Gaga, who will send you pictures of beheadings if you criticize her single.
I would like to say that when I wrote about the last Gaga record, like some of the things that the Monsters did were like, I want to say like even better than the Beehive.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Like they know.
Excuse me.
Well, better. You mean
standing for that.
You mean better in terms of the stunting, right?
Yes, like wild. Yeah. Yes, like wilder and like more disruptive.
And here's, this is a total side note, obviously,
it's fine.
But the thing about that is that it's like, oh, look at how well the rhetoric of your benevolent leader is working. You know, that's the thing, is that the Gaga rhetoric has always been empty. Preaching individuality to a stadium of people dressed like her. Preaching love to these hateful people who are like sort of like more agonized about her career status than she is. I think lambs at this point are completely at peace with the fact that Mariah is who she is.
I do feel like I've had, and we'll cycle back to this, but like after I wrote about the Vegas residency and like got shredded for like 48 hours on Twitter, but then I met some folks just like over the course of the last couple of years who were like, oh, you wrote that piece.
I'm pretty sure I was one of them. I think when I met you, I was like, you were mean to Mariah.
Yeah, but also, but I feel like the typical conversation goes like this, like, how could you say that about Mariah? And then I go, well, you know, I'm a big Mariah fan.
Oh, I said, you probably made Mariah drink a lot of white wine.
It wasn't me.
Yeah, it takes less than that.
But the conversation tends to start there and where it's like, how could you do that? And then the conversation tends to end at, well, of course she can't hit those notes, but why would you say that?
Right.
And I feel like there is this kind of like general acceptance within the Lamely.
I think that's where I tend to differ. I don't.
Wow.
Whoa, wait.
Wow.
It depends on what you mean when which notes. I think, wait, like if you're talking,
that's what
if you're
the
talking,
definition
if you're talking
of
like
is.
1990s Mariah, that is over. That's done. That actually probably with time would not have happened anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're talking about like Mariah Carey sounding decent, like around 2005, then I think that's possible. Because I think when you saw Her Vegas show, and by the time I saw it, which was recently over Labor Day, I think it was like two different shows. But I think even with the way Mariah tours now, it's like she sounds a mess for a hot couple of minutes.
And then kind of
then eventually it comes back, and then she loses it again.
It seems entirely unpredictable.
There's like a BET special that you can go to on YouTube. When I want to think about the good old days, or where she showed up drunk in that, allegedly drunk in that jazz club. That was good.
Yeah, just for the one, right off top. In addition to I'm just gonna put a blanket allegedly over this whole podcast.
Yes,
everything that we say that feels like slightly left. There's just an implied allegedly in front of it. We'll just say that.
Well, I mean, she doesn't talk about her life, so you have to fill in the holes yourself.
I know there's bathrooms. I know there's chaise lounges. Like, that's all I know. And wine glasses.
Weed dispensary.
And very good lighting.
Right. Speaking of unpredictability, let's talk about New Year's Eve. So just to set the stage, and then we can all go ham on this. So Mariah performs New Year's Eve just before midnight on Dick Clark's Rockin' New Year's Eve, hosted by Ryan Seacrest.
I think it's New Year's Rockin' Eve.
I definitely was not watching. nor have I watched it live in many years. So whatever that is, she was performing on it, which is both kind of a get for them and sort of a L for her, because like who else performs that? Like Haley Steinfeld or something? Not actually, but like the level.
I mean, she might have.
You know what I mean? Like thing, DNC and Haley Steinfeld. It's like people who Mariah should not be in the same room as. It's like, I'm willing to concede that Mariah is like a better star.
Yes, but she's not. I mean, these are people that she's desperate to be in the same room as and better than.
That's the problem. Yeah. That's ultimately the problem. So she is doing this thing. It's a three-song set. She does Auld Lang Syne, which is something that she has recorded previously.
Yes. Merry Christmas to you.
Yes. And now you know that she's recorded previously because that's what she was lip-syncing on the show. Then comes the two classic Mariah records, which are Emotions and We Belong Together. And what happens during Emotions is basically as close to a full-scale meltdown of a quote-unquote live performance as I've maybe ever seen on a televised thing.
I will go with that.
Yes, which is Mariah, she takes her earpiece out. So she's not hearing the music in her ear. Whether the earpiece was working or not is up for some debate. She starts trying to sing and then basically abandons it two bars in. And that happens maybe three or four times throughout the course of the song. And instead of kind of putting a good face on it, she basically makes the meltdown the narrative, which is something she does during her live shows as well when something goes wrong. Right. But she does this on, you know, national. It's one thing in a room with 3,000 people. It's another thing when you're like being watched by 20 million people around the country. That happens, then We Belong Together comes, and basically the song just plays, and she just walks.
Well, she announces that it's the album version.
Yes, and she just walks around a bit, and then walks off stage.
Very disgusted.
She sang a little bit in the beginning. A
little bit.
Right, but clearly it was something that she was going to sing along to the track, and the track was way, way louder than her mic.
Okay, so here's like a potential alternate history of this event, because I feel like there's been a lot of he said, she said, they said in the wake of this, with everybody blaming each other. Mariah has a very loud and aggressive manager,
to say the least.
Yes, yeah. Who is really trying to take Dick Clark Productions down, and then the audio company is coming and basically be like, not us, don't even think of coming for us because we do this.
Right.
Maybe Mariah soundchecked. Maybe she didn't soundcheck. Maybe she came to soundcheck and just sat there.
Well, she said she didn't soundcheck.
Well, she said, but then there's like a photo of her at soundcheck.
Okay, so she showed up at the
soundcheck. There might have been a photo of me at soundcheck.
Well, it was very clear to me that happened.
She probably
allegedly. It just seems like she was present for the soundcheck, but she did not actually soundcheck Emotions, the song that she was supposed to sing mostly live. That's what it seemed like to me.
Can I propose a potential alternate theme?
Sure.
Just. Since We Belong Together was clearly meant to be sung to track.
Right.
Is it possible that Emotions was also supposed to be sung to track, but somehow the wrong audio got played and she got confused when she didn't hear herself on the track? Is that too left field?
No, because she pulls out the earpiece at the very beginning of the song, which means that...
Before?
Yes. Before she says, as the drum intro kicks in.
But before the first...
Yes, before, because there's like...
So she doesn't
there's the
know.
Intro, right. I mean, I guess it's conceivable that maybe the vocalizing, because she kind of like hums in the beginning of the song, maybe, but it would require like a frame-by-frame analysis.
Yeah, it needs some Zapruder films.
Right, exactly.
I got the sense that she was literally going to repeat how she performs Emotions in Vegas. So when I saw her in Vegas, I actually will say she sang mostly live, because one thing about Mariah is that she's a terrible lip syncer. So when she is going out. So for a lot of it, like, you could hear her. So with emotions, she glides over the track, but there are a lot of points where she makes the effort to sing above it to let you know she still has some ability and singing ability. But I think there also has a lot to do with her manager, who is cheap if you watch the show.
True.
She normally has, like, an actual band, and then there are, like, the background singers, like, the same people that she always works with, whereas there, like, she's just standing there with the track playing.
Yes.
And something
and the dancers.
Right.
And just as a sidebar, apparently either today or yesterday, the creative director got fired.
Yeah, Anthony Burrell.
Yes, in part because he maybe moved the backup singers off stage.
Which,
or, like,
also doesn't make sense.
Doesn't
make
has nothing sense. To do with anything.
Right.
Yeah,
of course.
Literally,
he's
going to
go back and work for Beyonce again or something.
He'll be fine.
Yeah.
Right.
But that was, like, the alleged thing, is that her singers could cue her in if the audio is not working. But it's like the
but
song
she was
is
cued.
Playing.
She was cued. That's why she keeps trying to jump in at the beginning of the verse, at the beginning of the bridge. She tried.
So what do you think is happening in her mind at those moments where she's starting? And obviously they're her songs. She knows how they go. Do you think she is forgetting the words? Do you think she is mentally preoccupied?
I think her voice is so temperamental that if the environment is not perfect, she cannot do it. Or at least, you know, it throws another kink into this unpredictable instrument that she has in 2016 going into 2017. And I think that, referring back to the last live performance that got so much hype, the Rockefeller tree lighting, when she did All I Want for Christmas Is You, and the isolated vocal went viral.
Heavy, heavy.
Right,
exhale.
Exactly. I think that she just didn't want to do that again. So it was like, well, I'm going to be on stage, so I'm just not going to do that. I'm not going to have it be that. I would rather be castigated for not singing than for singing.
That's exactly how I feel like what happened. She's too aware of what that meant to her career.
But then why do this at all?
Oh, you mean, like, why is she to be on the show?
Yes, why even agree?
She's making a lot of questionable decisions lately. She acts like someone that needs, like, private jet money.
Totally.
Now that she is no longer marrying a billionaire, maybe she does actually need private jet money.
I don't get the reality show. I don't get her booking that. And if you're going to book that, which is fine, everything has to be perfect.
Right.
Because now, which I still don't get why you're opening for Lionel Richie, but now that you're
opening for Lionel Richie,
no one wants to go see you.
Right.
I saw her in Vegas and I actually enjoyed myself, but I think when I try to tell people that, they don't believe me, and they have absolutely no reason to believe me.
Right.
Because Mariah consistently either lip syncs, or she'll have, like, good vocal performances that only, like, a fan will find on YouTube, or she does, like, this on national television. So, like, no one's going to pay to see Mariah as, like, a touring act.
Yeah.
Okay, when you guys are watching, in as close as we can to sort of breaking down piece by piece what happened in New Year's Eve, what do you think, based on the visuals, actually went wrong? Do you think it's the earpiece? Do you think it's that fear of hers of basically, I don't want to create another viral moment about my voice, so I'll just create a viral moment that's not about my voice, which is, I guess, better? What do you think actually is the sort of, like, TikTok of what happened? Rich, where's your heart at on this?
I tend to think that there was an issue. I think it would be, like, beyond sort of the possibility of human behavior to actually show up for a job you're supposed to do and then, you know, after 27 years in the business, and then just decide, oh, actually, I'm not going to do that job. Mm-hmm. So she said multiple times that she couldn't hear.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that for whatever reason she couldn't hear, whether, you know, it was her ear or the earpiece, which I really think it was the earpiece, mm-hmm. whether the earpiece wasn't working at all or whether it was choppy or something, there was something that was going to possibly mess her up. And instead of allowing that to happen, she just didn't participate, basically. But to your question before, I think a major thing here is that she is so obsessed with youth. You know, she talks about how she doesn't have birthdays, she has anniversaries, she's eternally 12. And I think that probably full, perfect voice represents, you know, the 19-year-old self that she is constantly chasing. So that's why she shows up and does this stuff, in hope that she'll pull out the one great performance that she does, you know, in front of a huge national stage every few years at this
point. But that makes her like Trump to me in that, like, you set this high bar for yourself and everyone else, but you don't really do the work to maintain your voice. Because Patti LaBelle still sounds nice.
True.
And she always says Patti LaBelle's my godmother. I'm like, well, go to her house.
And take a lesson.
Eat. Yeah. I mean, I guess you only eat salmon and capers or whatever you said, but like, take some lessons. She also sings like a smoker to me.
Patti! Sorry.
You can tell she drinks, but Patti! Well, yeah.
Shouts to James White.
She seems like a smoker to me.
We see you, boss. We see you.
You ever think that? Because I think even at her worst, she'll hit the high notes, but she can't finish the verses. She'll sound very breathy.
Right.
I don't know what it is. Is it smoking
really
or drinking?
But do you think she's really hitting those notes? Like, for real? Like, when's the last time you saw a video?
Which notes?
I'm talking about OG notes. I'm not talking about 05 notes. I'm talking about original notes. And I say this as a person who has seen the Vegas show. I've seen two of the Christmas shows in the last 3 years. Watched as many YouTube clips as you can watch. There are no documented actual episodes of her genuinely hitting those notes, I don't think.
Well, I don't know what you mean by that, because like when we saw her the first Christmas show, she sang Hero and f***ed it up, and it was clearly not lip-synced. Or she didn't f*** it up. Like, the band f***ed it up.
Yeah.
Then she had to do it all over again, and I thought that performance was fine. I mean, it wasn't, 1993,
right.
But it was still good.
That was probably the best moment that I've seen her live in the last 5 years.
And also the Joy to the World a cappella intro was good. Oh Holy Night even had its moments. Mm-hmm. But that was something interesting, too, is that in that show, I saw a level of lip syncing that was highly sophisticated, where clearly she had in her head the lines that she was not going to even attempt.
Yes.
And it was like the oral equivalent of tasteful plastic surgery.
Yes, which is how I think I think real stars do it.
Right.
Because I'm not under any illusion when I go to any show that there isn't some kind of give and take between track recording and between, that Rihanna, Taylor Swift, like these are all shows that where
Rihanna
of the show
doesn't
are
even
like,
bother to give you
the no, that's an entirely other.
She literally puts the mic out like you got it. Right.
For all we know, this is a Rihanna concert.
Does Mariah hit
right now the three of us talking.
The exact notes? No, but does Mariah? Does she still have the capability of sounding good and strong and like actually doing an enjoyable show? I actually think that's possible. Mm-hmm. I think whether or not she does the work to maintain her voice and like that is debatable. Because as of now, she's not doing the work and she has questionable people around her. Because I blame her manager for that whole thing.
If you see how Mariah prepared for the tour on Mariah's World, it's like about as much, it's like as much preparation
and
as like.
And her manager didn't know, who was basically the Russian Sam Lufty, is like, she like didn't know the times. I'm like, she just doesn't know certain things. Like, I think she gets Mariah work. The work itself is questionable. Mm-hmm. And well, Tommy Mottola sent that letter to New York Post. I think she.
Yeah, you mentioned it. Tell us about that.
Sent a letter, which is the shadiest thing he could have ever done.
I mean, for our younger audience members, Tommy Mottola is the record executive who basically signed Mariah and then like trapped her in a house like Rapunzel for a bunch of years while she put out hit records and like didn't put her on the road and basically like kept her locked away from the world.
Right. I don't know if she's ever used the word abuse, but she's certainly
implied.
Well, he lauds her in the letter saying, she has one of the greatest voices in the last three decades of songwriting, but then goes on to say she needs to reassess where her career is, and he questioned her management. He questioned why she was doing like a reality show. He said that was like essentially beneath her, which I think is true, but it depends on how you look at it. Like, I personally wouldn't have minded an actual docuseries about Mariah and the tour, but I think what I wrote about the show is that it's boring because it's not like the overly situated, dramatic things that make a reality show work, and it's not the realistic depiction that would actually make a
documentary
work.
Yeah.
It's just something that's kind of there. Mm-hmm. It's like a filtered IG look kind of her life, but mostly through the life of like her employees who we don't necessarily care about that much.
No, yeah, but this is, I mean, I think you guys both pointed out that her manager has also produced other reality shows.
Right.
And
for VH1 and MTV.
Right. And the
show was on Last Comic Standing in 2006. Right.
But the show is very much shot, and it's shot in the style like basically somewhere between like Keeping Up with the Kardashians and Cribs.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like it does that signature Crib shot of like speeding around the corner and showing you the tub.
Right.
And then speeding around the other corner and showing you the bedposts.
Yeah.
Some of the motifs in Mariah's World reminded me the show, which I didn't know she had produced, was the Paris Hilton BFF show.
Yeah.
And when you think about how they abuse the assistant on Mariah's World, that feels very much taken from that play.
Totally. Yeah, the show is almost like sort of like the reality TV equivalent of a Chase Lounge, which is sort of like made as easily for Mariah to lounge on as possible. Like, how can we do a reality show that requires as little work from her as possible? She's not going to divulge anything, but she wants to do this, so let's build a circus around her.
Right, build it around her.
Right.
I think Mariah's at her best on TV and Watch What Happens Live and Cribs.
Yes.
You literally have to just sit her down or like let her walk you around and just talk.
HSN too.
Yes.
I've never seen her on HSN.
You have to prod her.
Yeah.
Other than that, like, it just doesn't work.
It's interesting you talk about Watch What Happened Live, because this is where I think the value of Andy Cohen really becomes clear, because I think, look, Mariah doesn't do a lot of interviews, just generally speaking. It's just not a thing she does. And I think most of the people who do those interviews, who conduct those interviews, won't go there, wherever there is. And one of the values of Andy Cohen is, like, for whatever reason, it is understood that he is going to, like, look you in the eye and be like, do you know J-Lo?
Yeah.
Like, he's just going to do Ariana Grande.
And she'll always give in.
Right.
Right.
She does. It's actually amazing how much she does on that show versus every other interview scenario.
In a weird way, like, Andy Cohen has become the Howard Stern of, like, this next generation of celebrities.
Yeah.
But I think if she's comfortable, because she did it on The Breakfast Club, too. When they asked about Nicki Minaj, who?
Yeah.
Right.
What? Although I will say about Tommy Mottola, it's interesting that he sent, like, public, nice criticism of her. But at the same time, you never had her on tour, which is part of the problem. She never trained her voice in the way that would require her for what she's doing now.
Forget trained her voice, trained her discipline.
Well, that's true.
Become a performer. Really, she's not a performer.
That's what I'm
saying. She actually hates touring, which I felt like that's why I thought she's like, she must need like jet money because she doesn't like to tour, admittedly.
But that's also why the Vegas thing makes the most sense, because it's like you don't go anywhere.
Right.
You literally are just doing the same thing in the same place X nights a week, and that's it.
But you remind me that I would never go see Mariah Carey like an initial date on anything she's doing. I would wait until like the middle or like the second leg. Yes,
right. But, you know, her voice needs to warm up or whatever.
Or she could just rehearse a lot and her voice will already be warm.
But I don't know what it is, though, because Michael, you mentioned like she's not doing the upkeep, but what is that upkeep? And I mean, I feel like she obviously cares so much about this. She cares so much about relevance. What do you think she's not doing?
Well, to your point about her being obsessed with youth, when I saw her go in the jazz club, because one thing about Mariah, even at her worst, her lower register is actually fantastic.
Right. So good. Yes. So good.
And she's very much trained. Like, if she did an album of like jazz standards or like something like that, like I feel like commercially and critically, that would benefit her.
Yeah.
She probably would not have to worry at all about performing and like warming up her vocals in that way. But she's so dead set on a very like specific type of music, or like recreating like the past.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There has to come a point when someone sits her down and says, like, you're either going to do the work to maintain your voice, to perform these hits as good as you possibly can in this part of your life.
Or we're going to try a whole different thing.
And I actually think the jazz thing would pay off for her.
I agree.
That would age her, so she would never.
Yeah, that is the problem.
Unlike, say, Lady Gaga, who, like, is not, she's not ageless, but she's just like, you know, she's
retreated.
She's either 7 or 80, it doesn't matter.
Well, Gaga retreated. Mariah, I think, has that point where I guess she doesn't technically have to, because she's so big, most people will always give her another chance.
Right, or at least Gaga, watch, like, what she's doing.
That was like, I need to sit here really quickly.
Right.
Because that another brick was coming.
Yeah. Whew. But what about the idea of the nodules on her vocal cords, or just the fact that she didn't sing in a particularly I don't know what the word for it is, but I've seen people like talk about how her method of singing was actually going to destroy her voice.
I've read that.
Yeah, she just blew it out essentially. Yeah. People say the same thing about Whitney too.
You know, even in Whitney's lowest vocal point.
No, the last tour.
Whitney was worse.
Oh my God.
On the last tour? Okay, I didn't see that.
Oh, the Central Park Good Morning America thing or Today Show thing? That was a nightmare.
Literally, Mariah still has moments where you're like, okay, girl, you can still sing a little bit. You can work on it. Whitney, towards the end,
it was croaking.
Yeah, and like that talk singing thing that she perfected, even that wasn't good anymore. That was actually really sad.
Super sad. But interesting, though. I mean, like, the one thing I will say is that I think that actually, once Mariah sort of got over the ability to just open her mouth and blow, she actually became much more soulful, because she had to, like, actually do things with her voice to convey.
As opposed to.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. As opposed to, I mean, like, you listen to the first five records, and it's just, like, sort of screaming. And there are good songs here and there, but it's like Butterfly and On when she started doing different things with her voice, mm-hmm. partially because she had to, that I think she became an artist.
Okay. Before we continue, I feel like in the spirit of lapsed Catholicism, I do feel like at various points during the podcast, we should all be a little bit prayerful. So, like, let's listen to Peak Mariah. So each of us is going to pick. Rich, you go first. Let's, just for the people, if we want to show the people what we're complaining about is not being there anymore.
We're talking about
song?
Peak Mariah vocal or Peak Mariah artistry?
Vocal.
Oh, Peak Mariah vocal. Okay. Well, Vision of Love.
Yes. Okay. Let's just start right at the beginning. Let's hear a little bit of Vision of Love, OG Mariah Carey. Okay, so that was Vision of Love, which is Mariah Carey's introduction to the world. That was an unusual period for R&B, and especially in R&B's relationship to the pop mainstream. This is before R&B is fully in bed with hip-hop. This is at least a few years, maybe 4 to 5 years before that really even starts. And you're sort of coming on the tail of these Whitney moments. And I remember Mariah being almost seeming austere and a tiny bit cold in that moment, but so undeniable vocally that you had to warm to her. She didn't warm to you, but you had to warm to her.
Right.
Let's talk about the Mariah of like 1990 to 1995, like basically up until Butterfly. What's her place in the world of pop music at that time?
That's actually my least favorite part of Mariah Carey.
What?
but part of that is probably because she
very
was
thoughty. Very thoughty.
I like Hood Mariah.
Yeah, me too. Once she was allowed to sort of integrate these hip hop influences that she said she always had, I think her music became a lot more interesting because, I mean, she was basically a chart statistic. It was just, you know, a string of number ones, mm-hmm. a total workhorse, you know, just pumping out an album
every year.
Yeah.
I have nice things now. Wait, I thought about it.
I love
the Christmas album. Actually, the song Miss You Most. I love Underneath the Stars from the Daydream album.
Oh, totally.
I think Long Ago is a really nice preview of what was to come. And I do love the Unplug album.
Mm.
When I think of Mariah, like vocally, something that I'll never hear her do again, it's after that. It's just like a song like Bliss.
Right.
She'll never do that. Like, right. To me, she should just be basically doing the roof now.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Just sing that and fade it.
And it's interesting. Let's actually talk. I wasn't sort of thinking about this before we all sat down today, but let's talk a little bit about the Unplugged album. Not only because I think it's basically a masterwork and might be her best full-length record or full-length release, but I remember that being the moment where she was first genuinely presented as something other than a cipher.
Right.
Up until that point, she's just a person with huge songs.
Well, with a caveat, though, that part of her talking points from the very beginning is that she was a songwriter. So cipher, like, is probably, like, too narrow of a definition.
I think that's fair, but for someone who is that famous to also be that obscure, even if they're selling her as a songwriter, was still unusual.
Yeah, there was no personality.
This is the early 90s. Right. I mean, this is like 1.0 or 2.0 glossy post-80s celebrity moment.
Right, exactly.
And here's a person who's sort of like bulleting out number one records, and people are still like, huh, Mariah? There's even the moment in the reality show where she's like, people thought I was white. I thought that was crazy because I never thought that, but the fact that that was even an impossible thing lets you know how obscure she was.
There's a book that I love called Bulletproof Diva, and she was a Village Voice contestant, Lisa Jones, and she was writing about the time like some black writers, I guess up north, thought that.
Mm.
So I'm like, when Mariah Carey first started, I was a lot younger, so I knew who she was, but it didn't register to me in that way, like to analyze her. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until like 95, I kind of.
Got it.
But I do remember being a kid. I never ever thought, even like extremely young, that she wasn't like mixed. Was some black in there.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm a Creole. Like, so I'm like, you look like a lot of cousins or something. Like, you're not shocking to me. I thought when I learned later that people thought she was white, I was like, oh, that's interesting.
I couldn't tell when she said that. I couldn't tell if that was because people are sort of like thick-headed and maybe like crypto racist, or that she just was literally so shielded
Well, she was
from the world.
She was kept away from black media, though.
Yes, and people had to write their own narratives onto her.
And the sound isn't particularly black either. I mean, she's singing soulfully, but the actual and the actual production of the music early on. I mean, I guess Emotions, you know, Can't Let Go is pretty R&B. But a lot of time it was sort of like a milquetoast hollow drum sort of sound that she had.
I always saw her singing around a bunch of black people in the back. So I kind of.
Yeah, but that's true. So Justin Timberlake.
Well, she doesn't have the range.
Well, let's talk about then the sort of post that first period and that second wave where Mariah kind of comes out into her hip hop self, which is like maybe authentic or maybe inauthentic. And like a story that always sticks in my mind from that era is. This is like 97 or 98, and I was living in London. I was working for Trace magazine, which is like the British vibe.
Oh, I know Trace.
Yeah, so I used to write for Trace, and we put Mariah on the cover. And it was like a big source of argument in the office because we were like, she's not real. That's not like, she's not really into hip-hop, da-da-da-da. Miraculously, and this would never happen on a magazine cover now, but the cover photos of her like sitting in a chair, like leaning back with her foot up against the wall, and the cover line is, "How can I be down?" or "Can I be down?" or something like that. And I was like, oh, well, at least if we're going to do that, then at least that's the way to do it.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure the article didn't answer the question.
I need to see that image. But although that's interesting,
I'll send it to you.
But all of the people she's been around, like, they've all vouched for her.
Yeah.
Like Mariah's from Long Island. Like, it's like, like she's not, I think she's like about that.
She also, like, look at the songs that she's sort of interpolated and covered. I mean, like, they're not, it's not necessarily hip hop as her source, but she was obviously very embedded with black radio. Mm-hmm. I mean, If You Should Ever Be Lonely, Val Young, Sweetheart. I mean, these are like tracks that, like, you had to sort of, like, really be into black music to
be on the radar.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Enough to remake them, you know? I don't think that was posturing.
It Ain't No Fun and, like, Oh, No Limit songs on one album. I've always believed her. She would be what most would call like Hasidity, but I definitely believe her love of hip hop and like all those folks. She
is authentic.
I could see her being removed from like the camera and being very much like. Even when I saw the picture of the other day going to the weed dispensary in a gown.
Right. Yes.
I think that is like that is Mariah Carey to me.
Yes.
All she needed was like a glass of a bottle of wine.
Yeah.
Earlier than Butterfly, she was talking the talk, but she was also walking the walk because I'd never really heard a singer treat her delivery like a flow the way that she did and changing it up, especially on Breakdown. So if this was some sort of a pose, she was extremely well studied to the point where sort of the line between authenticity and inauthenticity is really hard to discern.
Yeah.
I mean, Breakdown is just, you know. Yeah.
Let's listen to a little bit of Breakdown and hear Mariah's post-soul flow on Breakdown. We've been talking a lot about Mariah as a singer, which is, I think, you know, and maybe in maybe Mariah's dream setting is how we would only be speaking about her, is we would be speaking about her as a singer. But the last 5 to 10 years have made that nigh impossible.
I'd say 15, starting with Glitter.
Fair enough. Let's talk about Mariah's back nine as opposed to the front nine.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the back nine. And I think a lot of the things that have been happening over the last, you know, 5, 10, 15 years are all kind of wrapped up very neatly in Mariah's World, which is a reality show / docuseries, which is currently airing on the E! Network. 4 episodes down, 2 more to go.
Oh, I thought it was 8 part.
8 episodes, 4 down, 4 to go. You know,
it should just end it now. I wouldn't mind if it ended at 6.
I've actually kind of liked it more as
it's gotten
along.
Better.
I don't know, or am I just mesmerized?
No, it's
way
gotten
that
better.
Reality TV does that.
I think it actually has gotten better. And I think also the things that you guys both wrote about the first episode didn't hold up the way that the show evolved.
Right.
And I think once the show evolved and it became clear that it wasn't about Mariah, capital A, capital M, that it was sort of this
about her world.
Yes.
Yeah.
Then I think it plays to the rules that we're familiar with from reality television.
Yes.
even though it's still ridiculous that Mariah Carey does this. Mariah's World, the one thing that I felt like I needed to say right off the rip and just get it out of the way is the opening sort of setup where it's her and what's the alter ego's name? Portia?
Oh, Bianca.
Bianca, right. Her and Bianca going back and forth. Why does Bianca look like Tierra Marie, though?
Tierra Marie.
That's
for ratings.
Yes. I was so baffled because I literally was looking at it. I was like, why is Tierra Marie on this show?
I see it.
It's real. It's real. God. And what does that say about Tierra for Mariah? What does that say about Tierra Marie? That's just how she's swagging. Okay. I just had to get that out of the way. So Mariah's World is unsuccessful in telling you very much about Mariah. However, it is successful in repeating a bunch of like very publicly visible tropes about Mariah that we have all come to understand. Mariah is almost always holding a wine glass.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mariah is almost always prone.
Yes.
She is laying.
Right.
All her pickups and interstitials are all filmed horizontal on a chaise of some kind, with like a toile fabric or something.
Right.
If you've seen enough Mariah shows in the last like 2 or 3 years, there is this thing that constantly happens where Mariah is almost never simultaneously vertical and moving. She is sometimes vertical and being held up and being moved. Or she is sometimes moving, but is horizontal.
Oh, my God. She's now at the Vegas show.
And this is a thing that Mariah has this sort of like almost like faux glamour where it's like I'm constantly being assisted by men. It's, you know, it's like the Madonna. It's the Madonna video. What's expression?
Material Girl?
Material Girl. It's like the Material Girl video, but it's just life.
Right.
It's just constantly life.
Right.
What is this aesthetic of relaxation? Because I feel like if we were, say, cultural studies scholars or performance studies scholars, there can be a whole dissertation written about like how Mariah never stands and moves and that all of her life revolves around relaxation, or at least the image of relaxation and mild inebriation. But let's just do like the short version of that here. What does that say? And is that...
It's like I've worked so hard that this is the only way I can be in my free time. I mean, you listen to her talking, it sounds like she's falling asleep most of the time.
Yes.
You know? So
it's
this world,
Rich.
This sort of... Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah. This sort of world weariness that she has is just like, I've seen it all. Look at how much I've done for you. I'm going to rest on my laurels, wink, wink, while she's resting on her laurels. That's the thing. It's this simultaneous, like, diva joke while totally just fitting into that role and reaping its benefits, such as always being horizontal.
If there was a thought bubble above her head, that's not what's coming out of her mouth, but what she's thinking, it is like, could you imagine moving?
That's,
could you imagine?
I find it lazy and exhausting, and I'm just like, girl, get up.
Well, yes. I mean, of course, that's a sensible response, but also it's such a finely honed aesthetic. Like, you think of, like, any other famous person.
I do like her
confessionals. They have an aesthetic.
I do like how she leans and...
she leans.
It's hilarious, but it's like, okay, girl.
I mean, we should all just Mariah.
Like, right? Willing her...
I'm always tempted to.
We should all just put our feet up.
Like, being wheeled around in a wheelchair.
Michael, put your feet up, man.
Okay. Yeah, see if it changes your voice.
Yeah, let's do the rest of the show like this.
Okay.
I mean, like, I feel like we should do the rest of the podcast like this. Because I feel like
am I required to say darling, too?
Yes.
Yeah, of course.
Oh, it's bleak, darling.
Yeah,
it's bleak.
You can't not.
Okay, I feel like, what is life like if this is just how you are all the time?
Seems nice.
This is kind of okay, right? This isn't that bad.
But then that reminds, if I'm going to do this, then I need to spend my money wisely and not ever plan to tour.
Right.
This is a strange moment because I feel weirdly way more tolerant sitting in this position than I did sitting with my feet on the floor.
Tolerant of Mariah's lounging or
possibly
tolerant in general?
Just in general.
It's just making you a more tolerant person?
I feel that way.
Well, maybe this is the secret to world peace.
Did we just discover something?
Well, I don't know, but this is also sort of like portended by WALL-E, right? Where everybody is just giant blobs, like prone the entire time.
This seems to have its limitations, namely when, you know, New Year's Eve and you're booked and tragedy strikes. Then you don't know what to do.
That's true. Well, it's because you've been doing this.
I need movement more.
So let's talk about Mariah's World, because this is, as you guys have said, started out kind of an unsuccessful reality show about Mariah and is now like a medium successful reality program about her
industry,
entourage and the sort of bigger picture.
Yeah.
And let's talk about the manager, who is sort of an outsized character. Her name is Stella.
Stella Beloshinov.
Yes, who was introduced to Mariah by Brett Ratner, which is great. I aspire to someday be managed by someone who Brett Ratner introduces me to.
She really held on to that Brett Ratner love. I mean, he directed Heartbreaker, and ever since then, they've just been
Who's holding
favorites.
On to who, though? Just like...
She absolutely...
You think?
There was an episode of Born This Way, the reality show about the friends with Down syndrome, where Brett Ratner was on it, and the one girl on that show loves Mariah Carey so much, and Brett called her up, and she delivered a message to this girl. And then eventually met her.
Wow.
And that, to me, that was, I mean, she answered Brett's call to talk to this fan with Down syndrome.
Amazing.
You know?
I mean, okay.
Well, yeah.
Brett Ratner, the Mariah Whisperer.
It was super sweet. It was great.
And the other Mariah Whisperer.
Yeah. It doesn't Stella. Stella, though, but that's sweet.
Right.
So
the good and the bad.
Obviously, like, the sort of low-grade intrigue on the show is that Stella's cleaning house and is, like, making everybody, like, chop, chop. Like, everybody getting together. You can't have your hairdresser because she costs too much and she's too dramatic, yada, yada. So that's the low-grade drama.
I want to see these budgets.
I would like to see these budgets.
Isn't Mariah Carey worth $500 million or something like that? Because
evidently,
she wrote...
Evidently,
I mean, she has a top songwriting credit on every single song that isn't a cover.
Yeah.
Including, she'll have you know, All I Want for Christmas Is You.
The eternal... Modern Christmas.
It's
banger.
True. She's relevant every year for at least a month.
She spends money like it's fantasy, but it's 2017. So
yeah.
I think that has a lot to do with the budget.
It is that sort of faux glamour. Like, it is that thing where it's a performance of glamour, and it may or may not be actual glamour. Like, there's something decidedly lowbrow about it. And it's funny you mentioned Trump earlier.
Trump again.
Who is the thing? Who said the thing about Trump? Was it Maureen Dowd? Where it's basically like how a poor person thinks a rich person is?
Yeah.
Or how a rich person
I think it
was who
that
was poor.
Fair review of that restaurant, which was hilarious.
Yes.
Oh, right.
But it is
yes.
that there is something that? Slightly off about it. Like, it's like wealth manque, kind of.
Yeah. Yeah, the
it's
whole
like you
darling thing. What is that? Zsa Zsa Gabor that she's doing?
Like, 10th wave, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. There's something, it's like, I don't want to sort of disparage Mariah's wealth, because sure Mariah is plenty caked up, but it is unusual that, like, if you are that caked up, and if you are ostensibly this wealthy, that you have this manager who's, like, strangely...
Yeah, cutting, saying you can only tour with, what, 6 dancers instead of 8? Like,
and putting,
really, that would have made a
difference? And putting the 6-year-old kid
on the bus
with the dancers? Michael, tell me how you really feel.
I feel like the show is saying... you know, the money isn't what it used to be. And, like, a very wealthy woman's money problems is much different than everybody else's, but clearly something isn't. Because honestly, like, for a month out of the year, as you said, like, she's, you know, she's popping again and she's bringing in revenue, but that's nothing like the amount of fortune, like, she accumulated throughout, like, an entire decade.
Yeah.
But do you feel like also the European tour was sort of a setup or practice for an American arena tour?
Oh, I definitely got that.
Because you can go to Europe and basically kind of screw up, but it's like, oh, I screwed up in Luxembourg. No big deal.
Right.
Whatevs. Yeah. It's no problem.
Is it a country? Is it a city?
Yeah,
nobody knows.
She questioned all those Latin American dates. Apparently, there were like huge venues. Like Mariah Carey doing a stadium in 2017. It's been a while
since. Is that a thing?
Well, she tried. It's those dates are canceled.
Oh.
She was supposed to do a Latin American tour. That went away.
Oh.
Now she's doing with Lionel Richie opening.
Yeah, that's not.
I don't think she could sell out an American tour right now.
Do you really not think so?
No.
I don't.
Between New Year's Eve and the Christmas thing, people don't trust her.
Yeah, no.
But don't you want to be
in that theater
room?
Tour. She could probably do that. She could probably like do the Beacon Theater and
yeah, but you don't think she could do the Garden?
She could do the theater at the Garden.
No, but you don't think she could do Real Garden?
Maybe like a night, but I mean, look at how Janet had problems, and Janet hasn't fucked up like that.
Janet hasn't had like an actual hit. Yeah.
Janet did better at Barclays before she went to decide to have a baby at 50 because I was going.
But also, didn't she sell out the Barclays in the way where it's like only have half the stadium, like the stage is in the middle, not at the end. Because I looked at the tickets, I don't know, when I looked at the tickets for some, maybe it was for another date, there was definitely one or two dates on the Janet tour where I was like, oh, it's an arena, and then you look at the stage, it was like somewhere
years ago, she was struggling to, like, the number ones in that tour, that was a struggle, but I think when she went back on tour more recently, people missed her.
Yeah.
And it was different.
Mm.
But no matter what happened to Janet in terms of, like, being, like, not making hits, like, she has a catalog and people know she can still perform.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Mariah Carey, you literally don't know what
TBD.
You're going to
right.
get.
Total,
exactly.
Total,
like, you
total.
Know the songs are there, but mm-hmm. will the voice actually be there? No one's going to pay for that New Year's Eve performance or that Christmas thing.
Yeah.
She's also a victim now of, like, you know, when things go viral, that's everyone's point of reference when I bring up Mariah Carey.
Well, at this point, yeah, that's her most potent public performances are that. Okay, I think it's time to, in that godly way, I think, Michael, now you have to pick a vintage Mariah song that you love to let the people know why we care so much.
Oh, The Roof.
Nice.
The Roof?
Yeah.
All right, let's listen to The Roof. That was The Roof, which is Michael's pick for a Mariah song to palate cleanse you after watching the New Year's Eve performance. You were just talking about Memoirs of an Imperfect Angel, which came out in
05, I believe.
No.
06?
No, it was 11. 08 is M equals MC squared. I think it was
really
either 2011 or 2012.
I always felt like that record, I agree, that record, I do think that there are good songs on the record, and it was weirdly has gospel undertones, I felt. There was a lot of times Mariah's biggest singing is also somehow a little bit thin. This felt like thick, big singing when she did the big song, the big records.
Also, like more of her quirky personality is what I appreciate about the album.
Lyrically, especially.
Like, it was just, it's kind of like I wish the reality show were more like that album.
Yeah.
Where I get to see like Mariah being like eccentric and quirky and like whatever she's doing, whereas that show, I'm like, I still don't care about these people. My legs are still up, but I don't.
We're still no.
I don't like that show.
The thing about Memoirs is, I thought it would be a little bit more wide ranging in its sonic palette because The Dream and Tricky did it. I thought it would be more like the Electric Red album, and it did feel sort of like Mariah Carey's influence and her sort of like caginess made it like safe, you know. So there are songs on in the middle of that record that are just kind of like sonic mush to me that all sound the same. But I mean, Ribbon, I think, is, you know, the best thing that she's written in the past 10 years. Did she write it though?
I mean, I feel like, unfortunately, we have to keep coming back to the conversation of Mariah's voice in 2016 or 2017 now. What role does it play, and what is its utility if its utility and role is not the voice that we grew up on?
I mean, when the fans want her to go high, she just needs to stay low. Stay low until you figure that out. I literally just want deep R&B cuts and sung from her lower register. I'm not certain she could duplicate anything else.
Do you think that her songwriting, literally the writing, is well suited to a low register? Because I do think, certainly for the first three albums, I think there's a very good match of the types of songs that she seems to excel at writing and the range that she could achieve with her voice. And I wonder if this husky thing, if it lines up with her songwriting gift. I don't know. Because I feel like her songwriting gift, I think of it as transcendent and astral and all these other things, which are very much in keeping with the five-octave range or whatever that she can hit.
But then you take something like The Roof, you know, where that's pretty husky and it's not particularly acrobatic and it's a great track. I mean, she has, if not an ear for melody, if not her own gift of melody, then an ear for one, or the ability to sort of devise really good melodies with other people. So it wouldn't be like, I mean, she can't be all things that she once was. None of us can be as we age. So it makes perfect sense to sort of tone down the voice and to keep up the songwriting. She still is capable of making good songs and has good taste in collaborators. I love the Mike Will track.
I love Faded. That's actually a good... Amazing. Directed for her. She should have released that after Beautiful.
Do you think that even a track like that can play in the contemporary pop conversation, or is she sort of preaching to the converted at this point?
That could have, because it's so subdued and it doesn't feel, there's like a sort of desperation that often follows her releases that I think turn people off and make them less like Your Mind, the way that it was sort of that she was naked in the video, like why again, and that the track was kind of like a We Belong Together redux, which was like
she keeps trying to recreate that.
I know, but well, because that was such a I can't even imagine what it was like for her to be writing that song, because you knew that she knew when she was writing that song that she was making magic, and then for it to hit like it did after all that she had been through, that, I mean, I could see why that is so enticing. She needs another We Belong Together, or at least, you know, in order for her to sort of like reach those heights again. So she's chasing that. But I mean, people heard it, you know, and probably Don't Forget About Us spoiled her a little bit, because she did rewrite it and it worked. That went to number one. So she's been given a model of how she can redo the same thing and it'll work again.
Right.
I'm surprised she hasn't called Ray Shrimmer yet.
Well, I was just thinking about I was literally just thinking about Young Thug in this exact moment. Because she worked, obviously, you know, there's Gucci, which is, you know, it's not like it's so far away from her to. And then I'm like, well, what if there's like a Young Thug Mariah Carey record out there?
I'm actually curious to hear what that would sound like.
I would like to hear that.
Well, she recorded with The Weeknd too. She like had posted
that
on Instagram.
With her.
Oh, did she? Oh,
mm-hmm.
This was a while ago too.
This is
before. In the past year.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
I think so.
Abel.
Yeah.
Abel, make that happen.
Yeah.
Okay, I think we're gonna go out on my moment, my godly Mariah moment. Which is like a little bit of an obvious one, but it's one that routinely brings me to tears. So let's listen to I'll Be There, the unplugged MTV version with Trey Lorenz, who weirdly is blurred out of Mariah's world.
Oh,
did you guys catch that?
No, I didn't, but that makes sense.
He's blurred out.
Because he's on tour. It only makes sense, what you're saying makes sense, because he obviously has been by her side always, and he's not on that show, so.
Wait, no, but isn't he on the scenes on that tour? Isn't he the male singer in the middle?
He must be.
But like, why is he, but why'd they blur
him
out?
He wants no part of that madness.
That's what
maybe he's too smart for it.
Yeah, Trey Lorenz, I, the great solo career that never was,
well,
Trey Lorenz.
He's still here.
He's still here. I'll Be There, Mariah Carey featuring Trey Lorenz, MTV Unplugged 1992. I'll reach out. Thank you for listening to the group therapy session that is the New York Times podcast about Mariah Carey at the dawn of 2017. I would like to thank my guests and fellow lapsed Mariahists, Michael Arsenault and Rich Jesuiak. You can read everything that they have to say about Mariah. We'll be linked to it at nytimes.com/music, as well as what I and others have written about our fallen or sometimes fallen queen. Subscribe to the podcast at iTunes, Google Play, wherever you get your audio content. You can listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. Email us about your feelings about Mariah or anybody else who's fallen off at podcast@nytimes.com. Our producer is Jocelyn Gonzalez. We'll be back next week. Just call